Lasat Kundalam Gokule Prajamanam. The first thing you do in this Damodarastic prayer is to offer your obeisances to the Supreme Ishwar, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Namamishra. Now why is that? You don't want to make the mistake of thinking that Bal Gopal, this little boy, this little cowherd boy, you don't want to make the mistake of thinking that he's an ordinary boy. Krishna and his pastimes can be very bewildering. Even the demigods become bewildered by his activities, what to speak of human beings. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Name vidu suragana prabhavam namaharshaya aham adya hi devanam maharshinam jasarvasya. Krishna explains in the Gita that not even the greatest demigods, the greatest rishis, sages of the highest planets can understand him, because in every case he precedes them. He's existing before they came into existence. So they have a hard time understanding him because he didn't come into being within their existence. Just like you can understand, let's say, a child who takes birth within your lifetime. Maybe you have a younger brother or younger sister who took birth while you were aware. So you can see their whole life developing. But they have a hard time understanding what your life was like before they were born, because they weren't around. Similarly, Krishna explains, the greatest demigods cannot understand him, nor can the greatest rishis, sadhus, or sages of the heavenly planets understand him, because in every case he was there before them. Krishna has no beginning, he has no end, and he exists outside the realm of our sense perception. That's why he's known as Adokshita. He makes your senses go down. Your senses are defeated when they try to understand Krishna. He's also known as Aprameya, immeasurable. Before entering into this Damodarastic prayer, it's necessary to understand that Bal Gopal, the famed little cowherd boy of Damodar Leela, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You see, in Vrindavan, the Lord does not advertise himself as the Supreme Lord. He doesn't want to do that. In Vrindavan, the Lord wants to enjoy off the record, so to speak, out of office. Vrindavan is his private neighborhood for intimate exchanges between trusted devotees whose love is so pure that they don't need to know that Krishna is God in order to make him their life and soul. On the Vaikuntha planets of the spiritual world, they know that Krishna is God, and Krishna is present there in his four-handed Narayan form, accepting worship in awe and reverence and great opulence. But in the confidential area of the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, there the Lord comes under the control of his devotees' love. That's what this Damodar Leela is about, this pastime of the Lord being bound by his mother. It's all about the power of pure bhakti, or pure love and devotion, and how even Krishna himself agrees to come under its control. And that's actually the only way you can capture Krishna. How do you capture someone who's immeasurable? How do you capture someone who's beyond the reach of your senses? But that Krishna, Adokshita and Aprameya, can be captured by pure love. He agrees to that. So this is what this pastime is demonstrating. It is the most sublime spiritual mystery. Therefore, when you sing this Dhammadharastic prayer, you feel, you taste a sweetness, a reassuringness of the heart. And that reassuringness comes from the fact that Krishna is our eternal beloved. Krishna is the soul of our soul. You see, you have a body. Last night we were discussing some of the bodily affairs of Kali Yuga. Why is the body dear to you? The body is dear to you because of the presence of the soul. When the soul leaves the body, you don't care for the body. You burn it or put it under the ground. Only because of the presence of the soul do you care for the body. Then you have to take it further. Why do you care for the soul? You care for the soul because the soul is part of Krishna. Krishna is the soul of the soul. Therefore, all your affection ultimately is going back to Krishna. It is Krishna that makes you care for yourself. And then, because of yourself, you care for the body. Singing this prayer every day during the month of Kartik is part of the Dhammadhar Vrata vow that you make during this month of Kartik. Or Kartik Vrata, you can call. Vrata means vow. And the main purpose of the Kartik Vrata is to increase your glorification of Krishna and increase your immersion in Krishna's glories. Sometimes devotees do other austerities, physical austerities, but the main point of all the austerities is to increase the time you have for glorifying Krishna. Especially the Dhammadhar Vrata, the Kartik Vrata, is meant to please Srimati Radharani, Krishna's most confidential devotee, who is the expansion of his own pleasure potency. She's known as Urjeshwari, the queen of the Urja vow. And at the end of the Dhammadharastic prayers, in the 8th verse, you get a hint of Srimati Radharani, which is the most confidential subject matter. This Dhammadharastic prayer is from the Padma Purana, and it is spoken by Satyavrata Muni to an audience that included like Narada Muni and others. But actually, this prayer is eternal. It's an eternally perfect prayer that manifested through the mouth of Satyavrata Muni. Krishna's pastimes are eternal. It's not that there's just one Dhammadhar Leela, that's it. No, he goes from universe to universe displaying his pastimes. And if you reach perfection at the end of this life, you go to join Krishna in the particular universe, material universe, that he is displaying his pastimes. You join his traveling entourage and you become trained up in the earthly Vrindavan, or whatever universe you go to. And then, upon mastering how to engage in loving affairs with Krishna, you go to Goloka Vrindavan. There's no difference between Krishna's dhams, or holy places that he manifested in this world, and that in the spiritual world. And, as we always explain, this Dhammadharastic prayer is sung to a very beautiful melody. It's called the Twisting Snake Melody. Maybe you can visualize when you're singing that melody and rhythm. It's a snake twisting back and forth. Nama Vishwaram Sachidananda Rupam. That's why it's called the Twisting Snake Melody. Everything in bhakti is very artistic. All the arts actually emanate from Krishna's lotus mouth. And the purpose of all the arts can be seen in Vrindavan, where every step is dance and every word is song. And all the artistic movements in Vrindavan are 100% for the purpose of glorifying Krishna. So a devotee's life is very artistic. But all the art is for glorifying Krishna. Don't make the mistake of thinking that the bhakti life is sterile and dry. No, it is the height of artistic expression. Everything, the cooking, the music, the art, the discussions. Just like when you read Bhagavatam, you see that the discussions are presented so artistically between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Bridget. So a devotee's life is very full of artistic beauty. A human being cannot live without some artistic beauty. I've seen even in poor people's huts or shanties that have at least one little nice thing there, one little beautiful object of some degree, because everyone craves beauty in their life. When you go to India, you can see even the poor ladies in the street have some kind of printed sari, you know, some kind of sari with patterns on it, or some kind of nose ring, even if it's just made of not a valuable metal. But everybody craves beauty. To some degree. And Krishna is the origin of all beauty. And that you can see in this Damodarastic prayer, which glorifies Krishna's childhood pastimes. You remember, last time we discussed the chapter from Nectar of Devotion, Stimulation for Ecstatic Love. And one of these stimulations for ecstatic love of Krishna is Krishna's body and the different phases of his body. So you know the three phases, the Kumar stage, when Krishna is a little boy, between the ages of birth and 5 years old. The pastimes he performs at that time are mainly for his parents and the elderly gopis and gopas of Vrindavan. Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj, at that time, relish the Lord's childhood pastimes. And then, between the ages of 5 and 10, that's called the Pagunda stage. At that time, the Lord's pastimes are mainly for his cowherd boyfriends. They sport in the forest of Vrindavan. After that comes the Kishore stage, where Krishna's pastimes between the ages of 10 and 15 are mainly for his gopi girlfriends, having secret meetings in Vrindavan. And after that, after the age of 16, Krishna is Navayovana. He's the ever-fresh, youthful young man. He never becomes old. He's always an attractive young man. No matter how old Krishna seems, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda in Vrindavan always treat Krishna like their little boy. When they would meet Krishna, for example, in Kurukshetra, at which time Krishna had thousands of wives, they had children. Still, when Mother Yashoda Nanda Maharaj saw him, they put him on their laps and cried over him, just like he was a little boy. They're always feeling this parental love of Krishna. You can see in this world, this material world, how people like newborn babies. Newborn babies look so fresh and innocent. Their skin looks so soft and new, and there's a bit of fascination to new life, so to speak, manifesting. Krishna's childhood pastimes are the ultimate in relishing parental love and relishing childish behavior. Krishna knows that. He performs his childhood pastimes in such a way to attract your consciousness and capture it. Krishna comes to this world and displays his pastimes to attract your mind from materialistic activities. What are materialistic activities? Activities which have no connection to Krishna's pleasure. That means even religious piety, Krishna comes to attract your mind from that. Religious piety means simply how to be a good person so that you'll go to the heavenly planets and enjoy better. Krishna wants that you understand that whether the lower planets or the middle planets or the upper planets in this world, that's not your home. Your home is in the spiritual world. So Krishna is inviting you to participate in his pastimes. We discussed how the first verse says, Namam Ishvaram Satchidananda Rupa. Before understanding anything else in the other verses, you have to understand that you're dealing with the Ishvar, the controller. Don't make the mistake of thinking this little cowherd boy, Bal Gopal, is anyone else. Indra made that mistake. Brahma became bewildered in the Brahma Vimohana Leela, stealing the cows and cowherd boys. So, Sri Satyavrata Muni wants you to understand from the start of his prayer, who is this Krishna? Okay, once you understand Krishna is the Supreme Ishvara, then you can move on to more confidential understandings. Very important to take time to understand Krishna. We should not ignore the effort that we should make, the effort that's required for understanding how is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we say so often, don't just come to Krishna consciousness out of distress, seeking relief from your material frustrations, and then not bother to make an effort to understand Krishna. If you don't bother to make an effort to understand Krishna, you'll never be strong in Krishna consciousness. And when your memory of material suffering begins to fade, then you'll start it again. You'll go back into the material whirlpool. All devotees require to try and understand Krishna as the supreme artist, the supreme controller, the supreme lover, the supreme friend, the supreme child. Make proper use of your time and intelligence to do that. Namam Ishvaram Satchidananda Rupam. What kind of body does this Ishvar have? What kind of body does this Supreme Controller have? That you should think about. God has form. God is not just energy. He's not formless. You're a tiny thing and you have form. Why should the Supreme Lord not have form? But there's a difference between the composition of his form and the composition of your form. Your form is composed of matter, but Krishna's form is composed of Satchidananda, compressed clouds of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. You are different from your body, but Krishna is the same as his body. There's no inside Krishna or outside Krishna. He is his body. In this material world, we try to imitate Krishna by thinking we are the body, and then we try to enjoy. And of course, we fail miserably. But Krishna is his body. So he has no problems with pleasure. He is his body. We try to think we are the body and become happy and satisfied, and we destroy ourselves. We continue to rotate in the cycle of repeated birth and death. Therefore, the first line of this first verse, Namami Svaram Satchiranam Rupam, is giving you, in a very concise way, the necessary knowledge of what is God. Controller, yes, and he has a form. And so you're taught the nature of that form. What is your body composed of? Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. Asat means temporariness. Achit means ignorance. And Nirananda means misery. Those are components of your body. You can look in the mirror and think about that. While you're, and you can think what actually the body is composed of. And you're going to try to enjoy it. You're going to try to enjoy it with such a mechanism. Because bewildered by the three modes of material nature, you don't know anything else to do. What are the components of Krishna's body? Satchitananda, the opposite, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He's not inside a body of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. He is the body of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So, you get your first lesson in Bhagavad Dharma in the first line of the first verse of Dhammadharastic. You have to understand that first line for you to understand the rest of the prayers. Otherwise, you'll miss the boat. Those of you who are newer, you can look at this picture of baby Krishna eating butter. You might wonder, okay, this is the God that they want me to worship here. Okay, yeah. If you say so. All right, I'm open. Just think about your impersonal background. How if you thought about God at all, which is highly unlikely, you just thought there was some energy out there which was divine and spiritual. We were discussing last night, everyone's disgusting Kali Yuga pastimes or habits. But these same persons who are acting out their fantasies on the weekend, they would never dream that the Supreme Lord has his activities, has his pastimes. And you can truly only call the Lord's activities pastimes because nothing is forced. Pastime or lila in Sanskrit means there's no force involved, there's no conditions. But just think about your escapades and adventures in this world. Everything was conditioned, everything was dependent, everything was controlled by things outside of your control. We're being given the most elevated knowledge, the form and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. This is what the heart and soul of Krishna consciousness is. You are being taught to understand what is God and how to be godly. Not just in a religious belief way, but in an experiential way, how to experience the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. First, we have to become detached from our body. That's the austerity. To become detached from bodily identification. All our problems are caused by thinking, I am this body, and this body will make me happy. Therefore, it takes a little effort, especially in the beginning, for devotees to stop making so many plans about enjoying the body. We come to Krishna consciousness with so many misconceptions. We're bringing in so much baggage. And all that baggage can easily be summed up as bodily problems, identification. The best way to proceed in Krishna consciousness is to minimize all these bodily complications. Start off with a clean slate and try to purify yourself so you can understand your spiritual identity. It's very complicated when you drag so many bodily affairs into your beginning of Krishna consciousness. Very difficult, because your bodily affairs are based on a polluted vision. You don't give yourself time to develop a spiritual vision. Krishna consciousness is very practical. But there has to be some humility. I was telling this to devotees in Christchurch. Just think, you're only 16, 17 years old, most of them were, and in, let's say, 3, 4, 5, or some of them started when they were 10 years old. You know, 6 years, you know, you've obliterated yourself. You've totally destroyed your consciousness through vice. Now, why can't you put in at least that amount of time to clean yourself up in Krishna consciousness? You started your sinful activities at the age of, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 at the latest. Now you're 16, 17. You can't spend 4 years to clean yourself up? Is that asking too much? Where is the integrity that I spent so much time making a mess of myself, at least I can spend equal time cleaning myself up? In other words, if you want to be Krishna conscious, you have to be for real. You've got to have some integrity. You have to be practical about what you've done to yourself and what you need to do to straighten yourself out. Unfortunately, so many people don't have this integrity. They want to play games. They don't appreciate, or they don't fully grasp how they devastated themselves. You know, they've been underwater for so many years, and they just come up and get a breath of fresh air, and they go, oh, now everything is all right. They don't learn how to swim. So I was telling these devotees, kindly realize what integrity is, what dignity is, what self-respect is, that you need to spend some time straightening yourself out. At least the same amount of time you spent wrecking yourself. It's a very difficult point for people to understand. Of course, when you are young, you think a few years is eternity. I was talking to your old acquaintance, Ray Bhatta. I said, just stay in the ashram, you know, a couple of years till you're 21, you know, and then you can see what you want to do after that. Just 2 more years. 2 years? Oh, such a long time. 2 years. I said, come on, that's 2 Gaur Purnims, 2 Janmashtamis. 2 years. Oh, it's forever. It's like that. When time does that trick to your brain when you're a teenager. I remember when I was a teenager, I was explaining in Christchurch. You know, I can remember a lazy, long summer day, which just never seemed to end. Remember days like that? A hot summer day, and just, you know, just the morning, and then it seemed forever before night would come. I remember just laying on my bed in my room in the sweltering heat, and just it seemed like time had come to a standstill, and you were trapped because time wouldn't move. You ever had that feeling that time won't move? I'm stuck, and I got nothing to do. I remember I would just lay there with the fan on. Just wondering, oh, 14 years old, what am I going to do? Everyone's enjoying except me. Why do I have to study so much? Why can't I party like all the other kids? I was thinking like that. Then I would, every once in a while, I would look out the front window, because my bedroom was in the front of the house. I'd look up across the street to see, you know, what the girl across the street was doing, and wondering, does she think about me? You know, the mind just conjures up so many things, and then you imagine in your mind, you know, oh, I'll say this to her, I'll say that to her, and, you know, this is the mind of a teenager, you know, that everything is so important. You know, it's very crucial right now. I mean, it's very crucial. It's really, the whole world depends on it. So I remember just laying there all day in the hot sun with 90-degree weather, and just with an electric fan on, and turn the radio on, and you turn the radio off, and you look out the window to see if any of your friends are walking up the street, and you look out the window at the girl across the street's house, wondering, will she come out, and what you'll say to her if she comes out, and you imagine all the conversations in your mind, you know. Of course, you can tell that it's a pretty tame situation compared to these days. Yeah, thinking, well, maybe we'll go to church together on Sunday. I actually did that, you know. Somehow that we went to the same church for one Sunday. I don't know how it happened, but anyway, the parents liked that, you know. So you'd sit there in the pews in church, you know, and, you know, read with the hymn book and looking at each other. Look back at the hymn book and... So I was looking in disbelief. At least thinking things are really just really slow back then. And then you think, you know, is she thinking about me? And, you know, this is a teenage life, teenage years, you know, just. And of course, after I moved away from that neighborhood, later I found out she was thinking of me. But I was good. That's how my family had moved to another, you know, somewhere else. But then later I found out from, you know, when I contacted my old friend's neighbor, yeah, she was thinking about you. I said, oh, no. Teenage life, you know. Why can't we spend some time developing discipline? Why do we have to, everything has to be now? Why do you have to have your whole life figured out instantly? And make decisions that will bind you for decades. This is the height of insanity. Why can't we develop some restraint, some self-discipline, some detachment? Invest in ourselves. Spend some time working on ourselves so that we can, in the future, make a proper decision. Why are we so cheap? This is what has happened. Modern society has made people so cheap. Everything is, you know, easy available, flows like water. Relationships are cheap. Integrity is cheap. Intelligence is cheap. No one wants to invest time and energy in themselves to develop discipline, fortitude, character. This is the problem. These are coming. So why can't we take some time to understand Krishna? Okay, so we come to Krishna consciousness, so many of us feeling distress. And you want relief. You've been frustrated in your sense gratification. Why can't we spend some time to understand Krishna? Who is the dearest thing in our life? The soul of our soul. we've already established that the body is only dear to you because the soul is in the body. When the soul goes out of the body, you don't care for it. And of course, the soul is dear because the soul is part of Krishna. What we're trying to do is offer people a lifestyle that allows them to understand themselves in Krishna. Both go simultaneously. Self-realization and God-realization are hand in hand. Just like when the sun comes up, you're able to see not only the sun, but yourself. The sun lights up everything, so you can see yourself and everything around you. When you become Krishna conscious, you can properly see everything. Yourself, your relationship with Krishna. That means everyone can understand they are the eternal servant of the Lord. But then, when you're very advanced in Krishna consciousness, a particular flavor of relationship manifests. But the servitude is the basis of all relationships with Krishna. So this is what we're asking here. That kindly manifest some basic integrity and dignity and self-respect. And it's so difficult to get. It's so difficult to get persons to do this. They've trashed themselves so badly. And you ask them, spend some time, at least equal time, building yourself up. No, no, I can't do that. I've got to make this decision now, that decision now. I want this, I want that. Yeah. They barely know how to take a shower in the morning. And, you know, and suddenly, you know, yeah, everything is all right. I'm okay now. Yeah. No. You're worth more than that cheap approach. This is what we're trying to do. Get people to understand you're worth more than your cheap, your habitual cheap approach to yourself. This is the agony of a preacher of Krishna consciousness. You see that people are better than what they themselves think they are. You see their potential. You see how they are part of Krishna, Krishna's eternal servants. But they don't see their own potential. They're caught in the grips of this hellish society. They're dashed here and there on the rocks of illusory energy. And you have to see all this. Your solace is that my spiritual master rescued me, so I have to try to pay back the debt that is impossible to pay back by helping others. This first verse of the Dhammadrastic prayer, the first half of it, will teach us the humility. The first line, specifically, Namamishram Satchitananda Rupa. Let me understand what is God. Don't follow blindly. Use your intelligence to understand what is Krishna. Okay. Then, after the first line, you can move on. Lasa kundalam gokule brajavana. The Lord is there in His splendidly shining existence in Vrindavan. And immediately, the prayer gets personal. Lasa kundalam. He's got earrings, shark-shaped earrings, that are swinging to and fro on his ears. These earrings are very special. Why? Because they're Krishna's earrings. And when they swing to and fro, what do those earrings do? They touch his cheeks. Those cheeks are only kissed by Mother Yasoda. And confidentially, those cheeks, they'll be kissed by Krishna's confidential girlfriends. But those earrings, they've got that good fortune of swinging to and fro and kissing the cheeks of the Lord. And what else do you learn about those ornaments, those earrings? We've said this many times. The earrings don't make Krishna look beautiful. He makes the earrings look beautiful. We've said to you often how... Does anyone have earrings on here? Who has earrings? No? Can you hear? All right. So, why do you wear earrings? Yeah. To look nice. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So when the husband looks upon you, you know, you're hoping, you know, he's going to, his vision will be satisfied. Yes, married girls should think like that. So, you take shelter of these earrings. Yes, they'll make me look better. Right. When you put them on in the morning, you're looking in the mirror, putting on the earrings, right? Oh, you don't have to look in the mirror to put on earrings, I don't know. Are they always there? Huh? Oh, you just leave them on. Okay, I'm not aware of these intricate sciences. But anyway, they're there because you want, you know, you're hoping, you want to improve your beauty, right? Of course, I see your spiritual beauty, but that's something else. Yeah, but it's part of your duty as Dharma Patni, a wife who's companion in religious activities, to look pleasing for the husband. So, you hope the earrings will add something to you. But Krishna doesn't wear earrings like that. When he wears earrings, he makes the earrings look beautiful. He's doing the earrings a favor by wearing them. This is pointed out in the third canto of Bhagavatam by Uddhava. Parambanam bhushanam bhushanam. The Lord's is... Krishna is the ornament of his ornaments. So right in the beginning of Dhammadharashtaka, the second line of this first verse, you get something exquisite to meditate upon. Krishna's earrings swinging to and fro, touching his cheeks. All right, then you get into the pastime itself. Yashoda vilo lukala dhavamanam paramristam atyantato dvittagopya. Mother Yashoda has bound Krishna to a grinding mortar. How did that happen? Krishna was running in fear from her. And she caught Krishna from behind as he was running in fear from her. It's like, you know, someone could be chasing a thief or a shoplifter, and they apprehend the shoplifter from behind. So Krishna was caught by Mother Yashoda in that way. And she had a stick in one hand, and she grabbed him with the other hand. What had Krishna done to deserve this? Mother Yashoda, what was she doing? She was boiling some milk on the stove in her house because she wanted to prepare some special milk products for Krishna. She was worried that her son is always going to other people's houses, going to the houses of elderly gopis, for the purpose of stealing milk products. So Mother Yashoda is thinking that, why does he always go to others' houses to steal butter? Is there something wrong with what's in my house? A mother would think like that. So Mother Yashoda began to think that if I prepare some special milk products from my special cows, then he won't go to other houses and steal. You know, little children, they like to take things. Actually, everything belongs to Krishna, but in Vrindavan, he's enjoying going to others' houses and taking things. And if he doesn't find any nice milk products to steal, what does he do? He pinches the babies there and makes them cry. And sometimes, if he doesn't find any mischief he can do in the other people's houses, he passes water on the floor. This is the God you worship. But think about it. When you were a little kid, you would like to do something like that.
Yeah.
Just go into somebody's house and do whatever you like, you know? But Krishna does that. Did any of you as kids like do things like, you know, smear ketchup on the walls and things like that? You did, Chloe? Yeah, it's fun, wasn't it? You know, just not be concerned with the rules of the adults. You know, just get some ketchup and mustard smear on all the walls when your parents weren't looking. Who else did that? Yeah, anyone else? Just, yeah. It was fun, wasn't it? So why do you deny the Supreme Personality of God and the Supreme Enjoyer those kinds of pleasures? You had that impulse in you because you're part of Krishna. So Mother Yashoda, she was thinking, I got to keep Krishna at home. I have special cows who eat special grasses, and these special grasses give the milk of these cows a special flavor. So I'll get some milk from these special cows, specially flavored milk, and I'll prepare some special milk products for Krishna. That'll keep him at home. So she was boiling this milk on the stove. But then, baby Krishna came up to her. He was walking by that time. He could run on his little legs. So he came up to her and he indicated, "I'm hungry. I want you to nurse me." So, Mother Yashoda, at that time, actually, she was churning some yogurt into butter. Meanwhile, there was the milk boiling on the stove. She's churning the yogurt into butter in a butter churn. And it's like you have to use a rope and you pull it back and forth to make the churning rod turn. And while she's doing that, a beautiful transcendental symphony resounds through the air. First of all, you have the sound of the churning rod as she pulls it back and forth with a rope. Then what else do you have? The sound of the bangles on her arms moving. In Vrindavan, all the sounds are spiritual. But then what else? Number three, she was making up poetry about Krishna's pastimes and reciting this poetry. So all these sounds together combine to make the most divine music. The churning rod sounds, the bangles on her arms jingling, and the poetry she was reciting created the most divine orchestra. Devotees who are following in the footsteps of Krishna's parents and trying to develop pure love of God and parental love, they meditate on this vision of Mother Yashoda churning the yogurt into butter. Everything in her house was for Krishna's pleasure. Everything in her house is for Krishna's pleasure. Still, Krishna came up to her and indicated, "I want to suck your breast." And Mother Yashoda stopped her churning, picked Krishna up, and began to nurse him, and was looking into his face while nursing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such fortune is impossible to understand. How Krishna, who has no parents, agrees to accept a devotee as his mother or father, just so that devotee can love Krishna in parental love. Otherwise, Krishna doesn't have any cause that makes him appear. He is the ultimate cause of everything. And he's unborn, Aja. But he appears to have a mother and father just for loving exchanges. So you can just meditate on Mother Yashoda looking into Krishna's face while she's nursing him. Krishna knows how to enjoy. He enjoys in unlimited kinds of ways. You might remember if you can remember what it was like when you were a little infant, if your mother nursed you, you might remember what it's like. You feel so secure. Or maybe you've seen mothers nursing their kids. The kid feels so secure, and like, yeah, everything is fine. So Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of that. So he's being nursed by Mother Yasoda. Although he doesn't need anybody for his sustenance, he doesn't need to depend on anyone for his nourishment. He's just exchanging love. He's accepting Mother Yasoda's love in that way. But then what happens? The milk on the stove begins to boil over. And so Mother Yasoda puts Krishna down and goes to take care of the milk on the stove. It's not like she abandoned Krishna, because the milk on the stove was meant for Krishna's pleasure. But still, when Krishna was put down, he became angry. He didn't like it. He became so angry that he bit his lip in anger. You can do that now. Bite your lip and see how it feels. That's what Krishna did. He was angry. Why has my mother put me down? I was very nicely being nursed by her, and she put me down. So not only did he bite his lip with anger, but he was really going to get into it, being angry, mischievous kid. He found a stone and he smashed the butter pot that Mother Yasoda had the yogurt in, that she was, you know, there's a butter pot, and then the churning rod was in the butter pot, and attached to it were ropes, and she was spinning the rod back and forth in the butter pot to churn the yogurt into butter. So Krishna came along with a stone and he smashed the butter pot while his mother wasn't there. And he began to distribute the contents to the monkeys. But he wasn't finished. He's really into it. He's really making mischief. He goes into another room where he knows that from the ceiling is hanging a butter pot. That's how they would store milk products. From the ceiling would hang a butter pot. And of course, it was too high for baby Krishna to reach. So what did he do? He took a wooden grinding mortar for spices and rice, and he stood on top of it so he could reach the ceiling and get into that butter pot. And then he began to distribute the contents to the monkeys. You can see a little bit in this picture what it was like, but in this picture you don't see him standing on the grinding mortar. Meanwhile, Mother Yasoda, she saw the broken butter pot on the floor, and Krishna wasn't around, so she knew. Oh. And she began to look for Krishna. How did she find Krishna? She began to track him down by tracing his butter-smeared footprints. We've explained before in that chapter from Nectar Devotion how the footprints of the Lord are stimulation for ecstatic love. You remember when Uddhava approached Vrindavan, how ecstatic he became by seeing the footprints of the Lord. He jumped off his chariot that Kamsa had given him to bring Krishna and Balaram back to Mathura. He jumped off that chariot and rolled in the dust of Krishna's footprints, exclaiming, "How wonderful this is! How wonderful this is!" But Mother Yasoda, she got to interact with Krishna's butter-smeared footprints. And she followed those butter-smeared footprints to find out where Krishna was. Meanwhile, what was Krishna doing? He was standing on top of the wooden grinding mortar, reaching up to the ceiling, pulling out the butter and passing it out to the monkeys. But he was also looking over each shoulder to see if Mother Yasoda was going to try to sneak up behind him. He was being careful not to get caught. But the monkeys, they sensed Mother Yasoda's coming. You know how animals normally have some sense, perception humans don't have. They could sense that, uh-oh, someone's coming. So the monkeys all cleared out of the room. Like, you know, we're getting out of here. We're not going to be around. And so Mother Yasoda began to sneak up behind Krishna as he was standing on top of the grinding mortar. She tried to catch him completely by surprise from behind, but Krishna was watching over his shoulder and he saw her. So what did he do? He jumped down from the grinding mortar onto the floor and began to run. And Mother Yasoda began to run after him with a stick in her hand. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who cannot be captured by yogis who travel at the speed of mind. You know what the speed of mind is like? You are here now. You can imagine you're somewhere else by your mind. So a yogi can travel that fast. The greatest yogis cannot capture Krishna by traveling at the speed of mind. Can never understand how Krishna is running from Mother Yasoda. Everyone is afraid of Krishna. Especially his time factor, his time potency, Kala Shakti. But Krishna is afraid of Mother Yasoda. She's chasing him. And while she's chasing him, a beautiful scene is created for us to meditate upon. Flowers are falling from her hair. Because her hair was decorated with flowers. They were falling as she was chasing him. And the features of her body were shaking because she's thin-waisted. That's the Vedic standard of beauty. For a woman to have full hips, full breasts, with a very thin waist. It's known as sumajjama. It's even a Sanskrit term for it. Sanskrit term for everything. So, she's chasing Krishna and creating this beautiful vision of the flowers streaming from her hair. She's got a stick in her hand. So, paramishtam achantato drutya gopya. She caught him from behind like he's an ordinary thief. Actually, the mystery of this pastime is that Krishna is already captured by her love. But to deepen the loving exchange, Krishna runs away from her and she has to catch him. Krishna is already controlled by her love, but this pastime is just increasing the love of Mother Yasoda and increasing the love of the devotees who get to hear of this pastime. So that is the first verse of Dhammadharastic prayer.